Hi guys, welcome back to Gray Area. My name is Michella, and today we have Rossi joining us. He is a house and minimal wizard who is making waves in the UK's underground music scene. Over the summer, Rossi put out his four-track Welcome EP that solidifies his sound to the T. The release was debuted via his own record label, Homegrown, which is an imprint that represents music derived from culture. Rossi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. So where are you currently?
I'm currently in my flat in London. Well, just outside London. I live in Essex, which is like just east of London.
Okay. Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong. Were you born and raised in London?
Yeah, I'm born and raised and right now still in the place where I was born. So, yeah, I love it here because London's quite a crazy city, but where I am, you're just on the outskirts of London. So you can kind of get away from all the madness and actually have time to chill, especially like with the schedule that I have now. It's like nice to have an area where there's a lot of greenery. I can go out for walks and stuff like that. So I'm kind of always going to keep my bases here, I think, because it's just like home comforts, you know.
Would you say that Essex is more has more nature in it as opposed to?
Yeah, so like where I'm in Essex, there's like a big thing called Epping Forest, which is like a huge forest, and there's loads of countryside. So it's kind of nice. And like I in my downtime, like a massive part of what I like to do is just really chill. And like if I ever get time off, I switch off my phone and I sort of go into like anywhere where I can kind of just be at one with a bit of nature. Not that I'm a massive naturist, but it's a nice way to switch off and kind of get back to the roots, because constantly being on planes and touring and stuff like that, you can really kind of get away from what real life actually is. Do you know what I mean?
Right, of course. And you actually answered one of my questions. It was going to be like, what do you do in your downtime? Because you're constantly traveling. You're everywhere.
Yeah.
I saw it all over your Instagram, every post. You're hitting every single city. So.
I guess I do that, and then a lot of like I like sports. I think there's nothing more humbling than if you're coming away from a weekend where everyone's like, oh, you're the DJ. Da, da, da. There's nothing more humbling than going and playing football or something with a load of mates who don't really care who you are and just are ready to tackle you the hardest. And so football, I play a lot of paddle. If you've ever played, do you ever play paddle? Do you have paddle tennis?
No, but it's I played tennis my whole life.
Oh, okay. So like paddle is like tennis with glass walls where you can, the ball kind of keeps on going. It's like a Spanish sport, padel. I play that quite a lot recently, which is wicked. And then in my downtime, just chilling and seeing a lot of my friends who sort of knew me before I was a DJ, who just kind of like are my home friends, you know, just kind of like just being very normal. That's what I like to do in my downtime.
Of course, of course. That's incredible. So like I was saying before, I wasn't able to really find much before your name hit the spotlight. So I saw somewhere, though, that you wanted to be an actor before your whole life.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, like I used to be an actor from like the age of 8 until I was like probably like 18 or 19. So I started in like musicals in the West End in London. So I was in like Mary Poppins, Les Miserables, Oliver Twist. And I was doing that on like quite like a sort of like professional level at a young age. So then I thought, what do I want to do with my life? I'll just carry on doing this. So then I just thought, I'll just be an actor. And I'll just keep trying. So I went to drama school. It was just a goal of mine just to be like, you know, yeah, fucking Matthew McConaughey or whatever. I don't know. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, go for the gold of being an actor. It just sort of like, that was just the obsession. And then DJing started coming in when I found myself unemployed as an actor, because you're unemployed most of the time, unless you're like Leonardo DiCaprio. On the side of it, I used to always be the guy who was just obsessed with music at school. I didn't know if you used to send, like, if you had music on your phone where you had Bluetooth and you'd send it to your mates, either Bluetooth or infrared. I was always that kid with loads of tunes and I would share them around. And I just always had this sort of obsession for music. And I think from being in musical theatre, I got a love for music anyway, in that sense. So it kind of just started spiraling into this thing where I would DJ on the side of acting and just doing my mate's house parties because I thought it was fun. And then after doing a load of house parties, started like getting paid to do weddings, things like that, like most DJs end up starting to do. And then it sort of just started spiraling into this career. But yeah, my early life was just mainly, I just wanted to be an actor. Like, I never planned to be a DJ. So it's kind of just all just happened, really. Which is probably why I ended up doing it, because I think you usually do if you do the things you love and you just love doing it, you'll usually start to become, I guess, somewhat successful in it, because that's, you never work a day in your life in the end. Do you know what I mean?
Of course. And it's incredible how some artists, you know, never envision themselves to make this a living out of this and a full-time career. And they find this. At what age were you when you were basically like, okay, I need to, I'm really taking this full-time?
I think I was like 19. Like, I'm 28 now. It was 19. I'd been traveling in Australia, and like, I had these little goals as a DJ where I'd had my first set by then. And at the first point was like, I just wanted to get one set. I just wanted to play a set just in a club because I thought it was cool. And then when I started doing that, someone told me about making music and was like, you should, if you really want to start doing this, maybe just start learning how to make music. I'd never made anything in my life. So downloaded Ableton. Someone told me about it, and I used to just sit there, and my goal was just to make a track that would get released, and that's all I wanted. I just wanted to release one track. I thought that'd be sick. And then it ended up being that track got played by Jamie Jones at Kappa Future Festival in Italy, like 7 months after it got released. So then after that, people were like, oh, who's this guy, this Ross McCormack guy? I wasn't Rossi by then. So then people started asking me for music, and I met my manager, who is now my manager, who's like one of my best mates, that summer in Ibiza around a swimming pool. And he was the sort of person that really made me see, actually, I think you should do this as a career, because he believed in me. He was like, you're really good at this, and I think we can make something out of this. So he sort of took a chance on me, but he wasn't a manager. He was like, I think we've both got nothing to lose. So I think the year I turned 19, I've been traveling in Australia, and on all the buses and trains and however we were traveling around Australia, I was just making music. I wasn't thinking about acting. And I think it was like this turning point where I came back from traveling. I was like, I'm gonna stop being an actor and just go for this and see how it goes. And like, from there, it was like a snowball, and that was probably like the turning point in, like, I think where I really started to sort of excel, because all my energy was going into it and there was just like no holding back.
Right. And how old were you when that song was played by Jamie Jones?
I think I was 18, 19. This would have been like, I don't know. I think the year would have been like 2016, 2017 maybe. Yeah, so I think I was like 18, 19. And then it just started. It was viral from there.
Okay, so you said the musical theater kind of almost shaped your inspiration or source of getting into music per se, but what about the Romanian influence? Tell me about that. I saw somewhere that you were kind of drawn into their rave culture, Romania's, or like their minimal sound.
I guess so. Yeah. So like in London at the time of when I was first going out in London, like UK tech house was like the bigger thing. So I was like massively into like artists like WAF and Latman and like all things, people like that who were like really excelling at the time. But then I'd started hearing about sort of like what minimal and real minimal you could say actually is, which is like sort of in Romania or places in South America, where they were making a lot more stripped back sort of groovy house. And so I just used to listen to the mixes online. But I'd never been to like I think I'd been to a couple of raves like that in Fabric. Like I'd go to listen to like Craig Richards in Fabric, or even early, like when Seth Troxler used to be playing. Like I used to, when I first heard about Seth Troxler, and then when Argentinian DJs or any South American DJs would come, I would go to Fabric to see him. And I acquired this little taste of like the sound in the UK was quite big at the time, like in terms of like the size of the drums and how they were played and the big drops. Whereas I just wanted to make something that was a bit more subtle, but that was like groove focused. So like, I think listening to the palette of like that sort of style of like either like Arapu or Alexis Cabrera or like Barem or DJs like that who weren't massively known at the time, I started to get this palette of like just replicating what I was hearing them play and trying to make a sound that sounded like that. And then it suddenly became this sort of Rossi sound, like out of nowhere. Again, not really planned, just stumbled upon it and it happened. So it's kind of like a not planned, this whole thing is a not planned thing where I was just kind of doing what I like doing. And I would just go out, listen to the music, come back, make it, or try to make it, until someone was like, yeah, that's good. Do you know what I mean? So I don't know.
That's the best thing that could happen, is doing what you love and fun, of course.
Yeah.
Tell me about your first gig in Manchester. I know you have a soft spot for Manchester.
Yeah. I mean, my first gig in Manchester, I played at this place. What was it called? It was I can't remember what it was called, but it was the basement of this,
You said it was one of your interviews was something like bagel or something.
Right,
I don't know.
So, I think I was even mistaken, because the bagel shop was one of the earliest. I think that was my second gig in Manchester, which was like this. It's a club. I don't think it's there anymore, but it was a club which was above a place that sold bagels, just a bagel shop. And it was this tiny little box room with no fans, no nothing, just a box room with a cool sound system. And like, it would get packed and so sweaty, but like, was so good. And like, the first time before that, I played at a basement. Again, I think below a restaurant. I can't remember what it's called, something to do with like, maybe underground shelter or I don't know. But it was a base. Someone who ever reads or listens to this would know. But I remember just walking in there thinking, I think Manchester was one of the first cities I played outside of London. And it's always nerve-wracking because you're thinking, is it going to be the same as back in London? But actually what I found, especially with Manchester, they've always got this spark. Like whenever you turn up there, they're so up for it. And they're a bit more loose sometimes than people in London, I think. Mm-hmm. I think the further you go up north, the looser people get in England. Do you know what I mean? And I had this sort of soft spot for Manchester. And I think I was just overwhelmed by like the amount of support I had at that point in different cities, let alone countries, because I'm just this geezer from Essex, these were all I thought. Do you know what I mean? Like, how is this all happening? Or how would people know your name and ask for a picture or something like that? So, yeah, it was an interesting one. So, yeah, I've always had a soft spot for Manchester in that sense.
Yeah, so considering the fact that you were in an area where everyone is a DJ and it is extremely cutthroat, competitive environment, you were able to establish this subtle, groovy, almost your own Rossi style genre.
Yeah.
That is basically, you know, kind of what made you stand out in a way, as opposed to everyone else.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have here in 2020 released a 4-track EP that seems to be your lucky number 4.
Seems to be that way.
So via Locust London's record label. And you had said that you spent a lot of time building this based upon where you were at within your career or kind of what shaped it.
Yeah.
So we'll talk more about that during the Welcome EP, but I know you've taught some master classes as well.
Yeah.
Pretend I was a student, okay, and I wanted to reflect my experiences into sound. Explain the creative approach you take and what elements or technology you use in your production to represent a specific event.
Like,
if that makes any sense.
Yeah, like putting experiences into sound and how you kind of recreate it, I guess. I don't know, I don't know, like, if this sounds, but like, obviously, like, going off of like, just this sounds really simple, but like, obviously, technology's moved on since the early 80s, 90s, and stuff, and you can just voice record things. And so, when I used to go out, if I liked a beat or I liked a sound, or even if I was on a train, and I suddenly got this idea for a noise that I'd heard that was happening, I'd voice record it and then just, it would always be collected on my phone. Even if you go on my phone now, I've got like just voice recordings of just me making noises or a bird noise or something like that, where if you've got an idea, it just comes to you and you go, oh, I'll save that. So like, I guess kind of, I wouldn't say like it's fully, I'm making sound out of the environment I'm around, but sort of kind of, because that's the reason I've called my label Homegrown, because that's, everyone is a product of their environment and everything they listen to, all the food that they eat, the television that they watch, like Michael Bibby made the Hanging Tree track because of a film he saw in the cinema. Do you know what I mean? Those things all add up to who you are as an artist, whether you realize it or not. And so I'd say, like, if you're an early producer, just use what's around you. Like, the beauty of technology nowadays, you can use absolutely anything. Like, who's it? Charlie, is his name Charlie Poof? Charlie, what's his name? He's a massive producer.
Yes, he
makes,
yes.
makes songs out of spoon noises, things like that. You can use absolutely everything. So, like, I guess the best word is to say, like, just be limitless. Like, if you're going to create a sound, listen to everything, not just the house music you listen to every day. Like, listen, use absolutely anything. Like, if people say, oh, this, I'm not inspired, just walk outside and listen to something and see if you can make a track out of it. Set yourself tasks. That's what my manager does with me now. We do, like, a monthly edit task where he'll just send me either a noise, a conversation, or something which he thinks is cool. Bless you.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. And it's just a task where I just have to make a song out. But yeah, I'd say, like, my biggest advice is use absolutely everything around you. And I think that's how, like, a lot of the time, like, or just use memory of, like, a moment in a club. Like, there's a track I have called In Village, which I basically based the whole song around a set that I saw of Rich Next's in Village Underground in London at Fuse. And I went home that night straight after the set and just, like, used all the feelings I had of, like, the bass lines he was using, the drums, like, all of those feelings to just put it into a track. And, like, this track came out, and it was, like, one of my best tracks, I'd say, that people like the most. And I think it's because it's, like, a spur-of-the-moment feeling. Like, music shouldn't just be around, like, oh, does this sound good, and does that bass or kick sound nice? It should just be around the feelings that you had in that moment that made that track. Do you know what I mean? That's how I work, anyway.
Of course. Of course. Mm. So, if there are any, what are some ways your sound has shifted from when you first started releasing music to how it is now?
Good question. I think, especially in, like, my drums, I've started to go bigger and bigger and bigger in terms of, like, I think when you first start as a producer, you have your specific isms and ways of your sound. But the problem is, if you start just pushing that so much all the time, it's going to get boring and people are just going to get very used to it. And then you're just a one trick pony and people are just going to go, oh, yeah, that sounds like that one. And that sounds like that one. So what you have to start doing, and what I think every producer should do naturally, is just progressing on the things that you don't do that much or the things that you need to learn more about, like. The beauty of music is that you can always be learning something new. So I think what's changed about me is, like, my drums have started to get, like, instead of just being one slick hat and a clap the same way, just a bit more varied and bigger and a bit more to, like, tribalistic. I started, like, taking a lot of influence from, like, early, like, tech house artists, like Terry Francis and Nathan Coles, people like that, that everyone talks about. They're like the gods of, like, drums. And just, like, that started to, like, really develop my sound in terms of, like, making it a little bit more mature instead of, like, just sounding so Rossy, but still having the elements that I had at the start. And also just learning, like, at the start, if you ever listen to my music, the reason you never heard synths and things like that is because I wasn't good at making them. So I just didn't put them in songs because I was like, well, I'm not going to put them in songs because I don't like making them. But after a while, you've got to push yourself to, like, the next level to go, actually, no, I need to start learning and developing as an artist. So then that's why you start to hear, I don't know, sort of more, like, emotional songs at times and just different feelings. Like, I think, yeah, I think my sound has, like, developed and just gotten a bit more, I don't know, refined and less Rossy sounding and more like a kind of, well, I don't know, that's a hard thing to say because it's me, do you know what I mean? But, like, less the typical Rossy bass line and sound and more just, like, now a new version of it where you've got a lot more variety and dynamic parts to a track. That's how I'd say I develop more. You've got more variety in what you listen to.
A little goes a long way for sure. And yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, but In Touch of Love, you had said in your promo video for it, you said that you had switched up the synths, you changed the synths a little bit, yeah. And that's was kind of, it's sort of like a representation of your maturity, yeah, and growth,
yeah,
and sound.
That's what I mean by, like, learning new stuff. Like, you get so set in your own ways. Like, I just used to have this one plugin called Subboom Bass, which is, like, the basic one that everyone uses and starts with, and I just stuck with that for ages and was just using that. And I think I was making a track with Enzo Siragusa in lockdown just through like Zoom. We used to Zoom and make music. And he was like, he just said to me, mate, I think you just need to use some new plugins. He was like, you've got your sound now. He was like, just download some new stuff because you can use it the same way and it's just going to sound different. And I was like, oh yeah. So then when I started doing that, I started realizing the same techniques work just with different sounds. So then your sound then naturally develops and changed by doing that. So yeah, it kind of, made a massive difference. And that's what you should just do as a producer, keep replenishing the palette of samples that you use or synths that you're buying or instruments that you want to use, because that's how you're going to develop, just by investing in more, you know?
Right. So I've seen you play a couple of times in Miami, but tell me, if I saw you play in Essex, would there be any difference in your style of mixing tracks you play? Or the sound?
Yeah. Really loud? Yeah, I guess there would be a little bit, because I think, and I say this to a lot of DJs and stuff like that, like if you're going to be a DJ, I think as much as you've got your own style and stuff like that, you have to really cater to the dance floor you're playing to and the people that you're playing to. Mm-hmm. So it's like you can't just go and play the same sort of style of set everywhere you go, because it's just not going to sit the same. People don't have the same tastes around the world. So if I'm playing in Miami, you might see me play a bit more like, I don't know, rolly and a bit more like, even Latin and stuff like that, because I know there's that influence there that people like a little bit more. Where if you saw me playing Essex or the UK, I might play a little bit more towards the garage sound inside, a little bit more faster and deeper, because I know it might be appreciated a little bit more there. Do you know what I mean? So as a DJ, you've got to be a bit more versatile. You've got to be versatile in like in how you're going to play, because it's just not going to land the same wherever you go.
Of course, definitely. Mm. In your own words, how would you describe the relationship between room size and the BPM or genre you want to play?
I'd say like the key aspects, there's a massive difference, because, and I've sort of learned that the hard way sometimes, where at first I was very much used to playing small rooms and just that was it. And then when you start playing those bigger festival stages, you realize your track selections and how you mix make a massive difference on those bigger stages, depending on what kind of DJ you want to be. If you just want to remain very underground, very same, you'll just mix the same sort of play, the same vibe, just so that people know that that's you. Whereas like with me, it's like, I want to cater to a bigger stage and cater to a smaller stage. So I'll change up sort of my selection or the way I mix, because if you're going to smash loads of big effects and big drops in a smaller club, it depends on the kind of club and where it is, but it's just not going to sit right. Whereas when I like to play smaller, more intimate vibes, you kind of let the music do the talking a little bit, and you can play something that's a little bit more subtle and stylish, because everyone can really hear every sort of frequency and see you in the flesh mixing it. Whereas if you're playing to 10,000 people at Elro, it's not going to work the same. And they're all just going to be standing there sort of like wondering when the next drop's going to come. Do you know what I mean? So you start to learn that as the, and I've had that before where I've been playing so many festivals for a while, and then I've gone to a smaller club with the same mindset, because it's just you're on tour and it's just not sit right, and you can see people going, calm down. Do you know what I mean? So it's like learning on the job, like you're learning to cater to different styles and vibes of size of clubs.
So you would figure out, let's say during your set in the beginning of this, like, all right, like this is a big space.
Yeah,
I need to, you know, switch up on it. There's no way you would know before going into it, right?
No, it depends. Sometimes you hear about a club and so you know the size, so you can prepare for that set. Do you know what I mean? Whereas sometimes I've never played a club before, haven't seen a picture of it. I had it the other week. I turned up in Italy. I thought the club was like 200 capacity. It was like 1,500 people. It was massive. And I had no idea until I walked into the club. And I walked in, I was like, well, I'm going to have to play a different set than I thought I was going to play today. And that's just how you work. And that's how you, if you can work well under pressure as a DJ, that's the exhibit A of it. If you look in a room and you think, no, I'll just play the same like sort of songs that I'd thought I was going to play. You have to be versatile. So that's like an exhibit A of like, I've walked into clubs and gone, what I had planned is not going to work today. I'm going to go with something else.
Yeah, be prepared.
But, exactly. But I guess it depends on the kind. It depends on the kind of DJ you are, I guess, and what you want to put across.
And yeah, definitely keeps you on your toes. That's crazy. So, like we said before, you did tour the US and Canada around this time last year. Yeah. And toured Europe last spring. So what would you say is the difference in culture or the nightlife scene or even trends in house music between the US and the UK? And which one do you prefer to belong to, I guess?
You're gonna make me start an argument here.
No, because it's like, you were in both spots. You've obviously seen a lot. So from your standpoint, what do you believe?
I guess I find in Europe, dependent on where you play, because I think, especially with the US, Canada sort of surprised me as well, but especially the US, like, because it's so big, like, everywhere's got its own different, like, vibe and, like, or sort of understanding of how far along they are with house music or electronic music in general. Like, you can go play in Miami and be appreciated and that'd be good. And then sometimes you might play in another part of America that's not as, like, electronic music focused and you're playing to, like, 40 people or something. Mm-hmm. But those 40 people are there because they really like you. But I'm not offended by that because I think you have to understand your place, that you're not going to be playing to a packed out club every time if you're trying to push a sound that hasn't spread across the world yet. You kind of got to do your time in educating people, you know? So, like, especially I sort of started to find that in places in America. I was treating my sets like I play one song that educates and one song that relates. So I was going educate, relate. And I play something that, like, it relates to the crowd that they might understand, a vocal or something like that they would know. And then straight after it, I play a song that, like, I want them to hear that they might have heard before in the style, but it's blending in with a song that they would relate to. So immediately you're thinking about, oh, I like this song, but what's this new one coming in? Like, I could get along with that, because you're kind of like enticing them to go, well, listen to this as well. So that's how I started seeing a lot of my sets in. And I noticed I was doing that a lot in, like, sort of stateside, because I think that in Europe, I think just it depends where you go in America, but in Europe in general, just a little bit, everyone's a little bit more underground or a little bit more open to sort of, like, I guess, breakbeaty stuff and taking a risk. Do you know what I mean? Like, places in Italy and stuff like that. I've played in clubs where you feel like you could just play anything and they'll just go with it. Do you know what I mean? So it's less about, like, relatability and more about just, like, expression and style. But I'm not saying that that's nowhere on stateside. I think it just depends on where you go. I just noticed that there's, like, quite a strong difference around different places you play. But Canada really surprised me, because whenever I've played in Canada, people really like underground music there, like in Toronto, Montreal, like, it was wicked. So those are the sort of main differences I would see.
I really like what you said about the educate and relate, because, you know, sometimes Americans do believe, like, some of us believe that, you know, the UK is always two steps ahead with, like, genres and music and underground, and it's almost as if we have artists like you trickling into the US to show us this new style and, like, teaching us something that we haven't heard before. And it's incredible, really.
I appreciate it.
So if Homegrown had a main hub of or residency, which city would you make it and why?
I think I'd have to start in London, I guess, because I think you should build, if you're going to build something, I think it's important to build it from, like, the roots and the ground upwards. Like, if you take it, for example, like the No Art guys, so another, they're, like, really good friends of mine. And if you look at, like, a kind of, like, blueprint of what they've done, they built their brand in Amsterdam so big that it was bursting out of Amsterdam, that people needed it everywhere else. So that, like, you could kind of, like, that, taking your question, like, if I was to start something somewhere and build it from there, it'd have to be London or the UK, because I would want my yeah, the same way I would want my start, my brand and stuff bursting out of where I was from. So then everyone else needed a piece of it and needed to listen to it. So yeah, I'd probably say London, but like, I mean, one day I'd love to have a like, sort of like a homegrown residency in Ibiza or, you know, the dream that everyone has of those things. But,
of course.
But yeah, I think definitely starting in London, it's like a, probably a focal part of it, just to start from the roots of it.
Let's get more in depth with homegrown, actually. So like you said before, you know, it's a product of its environment.
Yeah.
My first question for homegrown would be is, do you feel like all the touring that you did last year around the globe, all those people you encountered, are the reason this has become sort of a message for your brand? Or was this something you have always envisioned for yourself prior to your career as an artist, you know, meeting all those people, seeing all those new places, what you said about, yeah, you know, who
I think
you are, where you're from.
Yeah, I guess like the initial thing of homegrown is that I think it's always like we've always, when me and Hamza set it up, we set it up just as a radio show. And the reason we called it homegrown is because I loved one, I did a lot of talking at the start of the podcast where I introduced the act. And I always thought it was a really cool thing. I was hearing mixes where you just hear the mix, but you'd never hear about the artist or who they were, where they were from. And I always like thought that was a nice little touch just to hear a little bit about the person that was just about to share the music with you. So that's where I got the idea of like homegrown is a thing of like, yeah, a product of your environment. Because when I was getting sent mixes from all these different people, everyone had their different style just based upon where they were from. And I didn't want to just limit it to having one style on the show. I was kind of like obsessed with the idea of just listening to people's influences and how they make music and stuff. And that's got to be based upon where they're from, what, like I say, what food they eat, what people they could talk to, what friends they hang out with, things like that. So that was the original base of homegrown. And then, yeah, I think now like traveling the world and seeing the world, it's sort of solidified that a bit more because I've started to learn about, or just see different cultures around the world and understand them and how different people work and operate based upon what city they're from and how big their city is or how small it is, or if they're from a small town. Or I'm obsessed with the world in that sense. And that's why I love my job, because I get to travel it and sort of like see that as a worldwide experiment. Do you know what I mean? Like, that sounds really weird, but it's like, I'm fascinated by it. I'm fascinated by people. I think that's why I wanted to be an actor. And so having that part of it about my job, I think that's where the little, it's a sort of people thing. It makes it a very personal thing if you call it homegrown, because it's literally about that person, their influences and what impression they want to make on you. So that's sort of like, I guess, the crux of where it's at the moment.
So you decided to, for your first debut, it was going to be the Welcome EP, which set the tone.
Yeah.
Do you believe it is, and you might have answered this in some form, shape or form earlier, but do you believe it is important for artists to explore their versatility and sound before launching their new imprints? Or can it be something that is discovered even after they have set the tone?
Yeah, I think it can be discovered. Like, I think a bit of both. Like, I think it depends how early you want to start your imprint, I guess. Like, for me, it was at a time where I'd started DJing. I'd kind of, like, been around the scene a little bit. And it was, like, time to sort of, like, have my standpoint on, like, just having my control of what I wanted to release. Because as any young DJ always know, it's like really hard to send music to labels, and then you're getting notes, people wanting to change things, people are saying, well, you should try this with your sound, da, da, da. And it gets to a point where you go, well, I kind of like that song as it is, so I'm just going to put it out like that. So it's like getting to that point. So you might start that really early on in your career, and then you're learning that throughout releasing your music. And as you develop as an artist over your label, your sound will have more versatility. Or, yeah, you could have the point of, like, being prepared to think, actually, I'm not going to start a label until I feel like I have the, like a versatile sort of maturity about my music where I can put out EPs which the tracks don't all sound the same. Do you know what I mean? It depends what you want from it. But that was, like, I guess that's been the point with, like, especially on the first EP, I wanted all the tracks to have, like, their own sort of tone. And stuff like that, and just different vibe. And so that was like the sort of initial plan. And I'm taking that on board as I go down the EP. Like my next sort of release that I've got planned is like the same sort of thing. But I don't know, like the hairs cross where you could have like one EP then that explores a certain vibe. And I feel like mm-hmm. maybe the next EP is a little bit more like that. Like everything's a lot more like worked around the synths. Like I was talking about earlier, I never used to put synths in my songs or things like that because I wasn't good at them. Whereas now I feel like I've gotten to a point where I'm comfortable enough and have like been grinding it out that I think my music's can afford to be at times like more melodic and like have like more really nice, great melodies that really harmonize with each other and things like that. So I noticed I started making a bit of music like that last year. So like this next EP is like a thing on top of that. And then the next EP I might make might be going back to like, all right, here's a fucking bassline bumper. There's like that. Do you know what I mean? So I think, but it's definitely, for me, it's a good tool to use my own label to show people that my sound is developing because that's your workspace and that's your platform. And I can release whatever I want on that label, whereas Hot Creations or whoever else might not want to sign that and it might not work on their label. So my label is like my control of showing people where I'm at. Do you know what I mean? I think that's an important thing to say, I guess.
Of course. And you're finding a balance as well, because with the last one, you put out three like dance floor bangers and then you had that one that was kind of like chill after party vibes.
Yeah.
So, and because you said a lot, you mentioned you want to create more of a vibe than a sound.
Yes.
And I wasn't sure what you meant by that till now.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say like creating a more of a vibe to a sound is definitely has always been my approach to how I then have the label going forward and who comes on the label, because it's not just going to be, oh, do you sound a little bit like me? Can I make it sound a little bit Rossi vibe? Then you'll be on my label. Whereas I think it should just be like, no, you can make, if I like the taste and the sound and the vibe, I'll have it on the label if it works mm-hmm. for what I like. So I think that's what I mean by like a style and a vibe is what I want to put out instead of just a specific sound. And different labels can go about it very differently. There's some labels that are just so defined on what sound they put out. But for me, it's like, oh, I want to explore. And like, I think it opens it up to a bigger market as well for people who are listening. And I think as an artist and sort of, I guess, a label owner or anything in life, you have to understand you're not going to be everyone's cup of tea. Not everyone's going to love you. So not everyone has to like every single release. Like at least you're putting it out to different people and like, I don't know, challenging yourself a little bit. I think that's important.
So with that being said, do you think that is why, you know, some artists are afraid to almost break out of their comfort box because they're almost...
I think they're scared of people going, oh, I don't like that guy anymore. I'm not going to listen to him or go to his gigs. Do you know what I mean? But there's got to be a point where you live in that fear. Like David Bowie, you always used to say that. I'm not saying I'm David Bowie in any sense of the word. I'm just saying that I think it's really important to live in that fear of like challenging yourself a little bit to like do something a slightly bit different to see how people react, or just because you love it. Do you know what I mean? Like if you think about the reason you got into anything, or say the reason you got fans in the first place, because they loved what you do and they loved the way you thought. So it's like, just carry on thinking the way you think and doing the things you want to do. And that's what you want to put out. If some people don't go for that anymore, that's fine. But some newer people might go for it. So it's like, you can't sit there trying to, and I used to do this a lot. You can't sit there trying to wait for everyone to say good job and that you're amazing, because not everyone's going to think you're amazing. And that's not the point of why you're making music or why you're doing any of what you do. You're doing it because you love it. And like I say, because there was a feeling at that time to make that certain song and you made it. And that's it, kind of like how I kind of go about everything now, because it's just the need to impress people, I think, especially as a DJ and like with social media, stuff like that, getting comments, getting likes, things like that. It's like a vicious circle. And so like everyone falls into that trap, and it's important to take a step back from that trap and just go, well, what do I want to do? And that's what I'm going to do. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, I think that's an important part of what we're doing.
I full on agree with you, especially the social media. It becomes people's critic, and then they feel almost not confident yeah. enough to share their stuff because there's always somebody.
Yeah, and there's a sort of like just constant, especially with social media, you just constantly people just compare themselves constantly, and you find yourself doing that all the time. There's always someone who's better than you, and that, but that's just life, you know. Like there's always going to be, and it's probably a good job that there is someone there, because then you've got something to work towards. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's the point. Like people were talking about, I was listening to a podcast of a guy who's talking about how people who have low self-esteem and how you combat that. Having low self-esteem is built into you, because you shouldn't have the biggest self-esteem going, because you'll just get too cocky and then someone's going to come across and knock you off your high horse. So there should be a part of you that's always looking around thinking, well, what can I learn more? How can I do better? Do you know what I mean? And that's like an important part of it. So it's not bowing down to that sort of worry that someone's doing better than you. Of course they are. Like, do you know what I mean? We're in this big rat race of life. So
we've just got to kind of just... Yeah, I'm a giant rock too.
Yeah, exactly. I've never gotten so philosophical in a DJ interview before.
No, that was good. That's great quotes too. Anecdotes for the story. So I want to talk about DJ Lover real quick. Aside from the production portion and how you had, and how it was a banger and everyone's obsessed with it. Do you think there's another reason why the crowd goes nuts every time everyone hears those vocals about, you know, the story that you put behind it about the woman, the DJ? Is it almost like a meme or a trend?
I guess so. I don't know. Like, I don't know if there's a sort of like thing where people like go nuts over the story of it, or maybe because it's just like so it's sort of like perfect to hear in a club, the sort of story of that, like and the DJ and stuff like that, like, and the fact of just hearing the word DJ, and especially in electronic music, what we make, everyone's looking at the DJ, so there's this sort of story and this thing between you and the crowd. So I think that sort of like those vocals have really always like been special in the club, and like I always hear people go DJ, like just as it's about to drop, or like not for a lot, like you hear people really like get into it, and it's like those are the things that before it's released, people are sending you voice notes going, what's this song? Like, do you know what I mean? So I think, yeah, there's like that blended in with like, I think that was a song where like it was a very Rossi sounding bass line. And I think those two sort of things like in one came to this song that like people like me the most for, because it's like very me. Do you know what I mean? And like,
okay, gotcha.
Yeah. And so I think that's why, just people have always just been obsessed with it, because it's just been like, that song especially was the one where I used to play it, and it was like, what is this song? Like everyone was constantly requesting about it. And like, even before it was out, like people are singing along to it. People are sending me videos of it. The videos are floating about of like IDs of it. And like, I remember first playing it at 93 Feet East, and it was just like, people had been hearing it in my videos. So then when it first came in, suddenly you get this roar, and yeah, like people know the words, people, and you're like, how do you know the words? It's not even out yet. Do you know what I mean? Or things like that. So it's just like, it's an interesting one. Like it's a very flattering feeling when that happens.
Mm-hmm. Another interesting one was Find Your Way. The way you incorporated the 90s style twist on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think it's, sort of like important to make an older era of music still relevant in the new generation of music today?
Oh, 100%. I think it's like that song was like a massive, it started off as an edit. So like the sort of the melody of Find Your Way, like the organ melody, I'd heard it in like a really old like 90s track, and I wanted to start making an edit of it, because I was like, it had something to it, but I feel like it needed to just be a bit bigger. So I just sort of recreated it in my project. And then just started finding all these different samples. And I heard this sample from, there's a guy, he's called Smart Alex. I heard this sample in a record of his. It said, there's some new songs and some old favorites. Do you know this one? And I was like, well, this is an old 90s record that I'm kind of recreating. And this is like, there's some new songs. And so it was like that's why I called it like an ode to like the older side. And it was like, that was the story behind how the song came together. And I remember speaking to like DJ Wild, because he'd like used a sort of similar sort of melody in one of his tracks, and I was like, how did you hear that? And we were talking about the record that we both heard years ago, and he was like, sampling is just part of the game. He was like, people who are afraid of that, or I think sort of like, I don't know, discredit it a little bit, I think, as just sort of lying to themselves, that I think everything is a sample. Everything is a version of something you've heard before that you've got inspiration of. And when he sort of started saying that, I was like, yeah, it is. It's like a massive part of it. Like, if you listen to how Kanye West made music, he used to just take records, flip them on the head, make a new song out of it, or just use a whole song, like in Fade, and make another song with it. Do you know what I mean? Like, and so like that whole song was like, it was an influencer. I was digging back in that sort of era of music, which I think now is like massively coming back. And so it was kind of like a representation of that in a song. And I think I called it Find Your Way, because it was coming at a time where I was doing that stuff of like really trying to move away from like the typical sound. So I was like, finding my way to that, you know?
right. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. It's almost like fashion, where the trend comes back, right? And those guys were the ones who were pioneering like your generation of people with music and sound. And now you're pioneering it by bringing it back in a way, and, you know, showing that this can still be like a style, just put your own twist on it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think so. Thank you.
So, follow-up question is, if you could live through any DJ from the 90s, who would it be and why?
Oh, if I could live through any DJ, I guess it's hard, because like DJ-wise, I don't know. It's a hard question to ask, because in the 90s, so 94, I was a baby. So I wasn't really going out as such. If I'm thinking about early DJ, I mean... The names I always drop are like the early London UK tech house guys. So like the founding fathers of what UK tech house is. It's like, I always say, Dave Mothersoul, Terry Francis, Nathan Cole's people. Like, I would have loved to have sat in Nathan Cole's shoes just for like a good few weeks, just to see how he made music, because I listened to his records and I think, you've made this on like more than half of the equipment and the technology that I've got now.
Yeah.
And it sounds better, probably, and more real and nuts. And I'm like, how the hell have you done that? Do you know what I mean? To me, it's magic. Like, sometimes you listen to those old guys, you're like, it's timeless stuff that it could have been played at any time and it would have worked. And it's like, to sit in those shoes for a little bit would be amazing, because it's always baffled me, and just... that's always been a mystery, and it always inspired me to kind of want to learn more.
Definitely. So about your album, your EP cover, and kind of the theme for Homegrown. Yeah. Where did the artwork come from? That, like, who was that man?
And well, this is kind of funny. If you look, if you just look there, so those are paintbrushes and art and stuff like that.
A little cider hobby.
It's not me, the person that I live with. So there's my best friend, the geezer I live with, is a guy called John. He's an incredible artist. He paints amazing stuff. He's wicked. And so when I was first thinking of the label, keeping stuff in like the home and like with relations of people that I always want to work with people that I can really be honest with and just kind of really get out of something what I want to get out. So he was the artist behind the drawing. And all that happens is that how we done it is that I just send the names of the tracks that are in there, the name of the EP, and we kind of come up with some... So, and then I send him the track and I let him sort of have a little bit of creative free reign to just come up with this idea of something that could work. And then we go back and forth and then I go, well, let's try this, and like warp it into an image that is related to something, everything, or one word, or that is in that package of like what is going to be on the EP. So the DJ lover just came from like, John had this idea of just this cheeky looking DJ that was just sat there, and like imagining the DJ that the girl was looking at and going, ah, do you know what I mean? And so that's where the image came from, this super cool DJ with love hearts flowing around him, smoking this pipe, like, yeah. And it was like, yeah, of course you're going to love that guy. He looks fucking cool as anything. So, like, this story of, like, the DJ lover, he's the DJ that she loves, do you know what I mean? And that was, like, the kind of idea behind the first one. And then so then now we've got that sort of cartoon based thing. We're doing that, keeping a white background with a simple cartoon every single so yeah, it's like a cool creative thing, but like it's perfect because it's just from my own home, which is like even better. It's just literally me and my friend John and my manager Humza just sitting there getting together.
That's so cool. Yeah, having your mates do it with you is even better. It's probably more comforting.
Again, it doesn't feel like work.
Right, exactly. Okay, so these will be like a series of some random questions. Take me through a life. Take me through the day in the life of Rossi when he's not touring and, you know, playing a set.
Yeah, so day in the life of Rossi. At the moment, I've gotten into a good schedule of like, wake up. I've recently joined in September, I joined a gym. And like that's been the first port of call in the morning, working out for the mental, or just doing something in the gym. And there's a spa there as well. So waking up, go gym, sort myself out in the spa, because in terms of like traveling the weekend, it's the best recovery process. So waking up, do that. Then after that, come back, either go straight to the studio, crack on with new music, or I'm literally doing the admin work or something for either the clothing brand or the label or the future projects that we've got going on. And there's always stuff like logistics, having meetings, things like that in the day. There's always, at the moment, it feels like there's just an always endless list of things. I think if you're self-employed and you run your own business, there's always something to do. Mm-hmm. And if you find yourself sitting there doing nothing, you're thinking, yeah, something you should or could be doing. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Obviously, give yourself a break, but my working hours are in between like 10 a.m. to sort of like your 6 or 7 p.m. where I'm doing even sort of stuff like this. And then once 6 or 7 p.m. rolls around, it's either like go play some sports. So if I can and there's a team going on, I'll go play football because stay active. Be outside, do you know what I mean? That's great. And then in the evenings, just chill, watch a film, give yourself time just to relax. Like, I think every day you should at least give yourself an hour or two to yourself where you just do the things you want to do, because we can all work as hard as we possibly can, but if you don't give yourself the downtime, you're not going to work harder in the times that you're working. So those are like how my days usually go. That's like the blueprint of the day. I don't know how exciting that sounds.
I mean, it's real life. That's what it is, you know. Follow-up question. What is your ideal world to live in? Or what is your idea of a perfect world?
That's a massive question. my idea of a perfect world. I mean, it's probably the cliche thing of just like the idea of a perfect world. Obviously, like I'm talking about like the bigger stuff, but like you know how you just constantly hear horrible things on the news, and so like a perfect world is which is where none of those things happen, where just people are all right and they get to go about their days, and like I guess a perfect world is where everyone gets to kind of live out the day that they want to live. I guess that sounds like I'm not really thinking about myself, but like I have a pretty great life, like in what I do. So the idea of a perfect world, this sounds so like, oh, the other people, but it's just like the idea of a perfect world is that everyone like lives a great day. Do you know what I mean? And like it walks around with a smile on their face. I think sometimes you walk around life so much, people look so like, oh my God, my day. The idea of a perfect world is that everyone gets to live the day that they wanted to live and sleep under a roof that's like nice and toasty and warm, and they're comfortable and happy about it. I guess so. That's how I would think of a perfect world.
I agree with you. Thank you. Love that response. Do you have any specific things you do before or after your set? Anything special, like ritual, tradition?
Before the set, I have this sort of weird thing where I think every DJ does this. So when you're preparing their stuff on Record Box, I have to go through and sort of just flick and listen to every single song in the playlist just to know they're all in there and I'm not missing. Yeah, just it doesn't have to, it can be for like, my manager hates this because I do it out loud usually. And he's just like, and I'm like doing, and I usually, I have to do it before playing that night or that day. Otherwise, I just feel like I haven't really thought about what's in that playlist or do you know what I mean? It's not that I have to order it. It's just I have to hear it all to go, cool. I have an idea of like, yeah, that could work with that. Da, da, da. I have to do it. I didn't think it was a ritual, but it's starting to become a thing of like, if I didn't do it, I'd get a bit anxious that it's not going to go as well as it could be. Do you know what I mean? So maybe that's a little sort of... And then after the set, not really. I think it all, everything starts to become a blur and goes out the window after the set, really.
Perfect. Okay. So now we're just going to do a quick speed round. Would you rather question? Cool. So would you rather only be able to speak using pickup lines or drink a quart of milk at every meal?
drink a quart of milk at every meal. Easy. I like milk.
Okay. Done. Yeah. Oat milk, whole milk, what kind of milk? What are you into?
No, like semi-skimmed quarter milk. I had like 2 glasses today. I'm a big milk drinker, so that was my perfect question, really. Just glass of milk.
Okay. Starting off strong. That's great. Would you rather eat all your meals upside down or live without music?
Oh, I'd have to. As much as I love food and it's a big part of my life, like... eating upside down would be all right. I just couldn't live without music.
Okay, good one. Would you rather be able to breathe underwater but not on land or never be able to sleep again?
Breathe? It depends if I got tired by the not sleeping or if it was like this hypothetical world where I wouldn't get tired. If I got tired all the time, then I have to sleep. But no, my choice. You know what? I'm going to choose breathe underwater because... if ever I got sick of like being tired, I'd just go for a swim underwater and stand there for ages because it'd be sick. So I'm going to breathe underwater.
Have you ever seen a SpongeBob?
Yeah.
Like, you could be like Sandy Cheeks where she comes up with this like huge glass like dome if you wanted to go on land.
That'd be great.
Would you rather have universal respect or unlimited power?
Universal respect, I think. Don't give anyone too much power because we're all going to use it and just be an absolute prick about it. So I'll have the respect.
Would you rather have a pause or a rewind button in your life?
Rewind.
Okay. Would you rather lose your sight or your memories?
Oh. my sight.
It's a tough one.
Because I feel like without your memories, like this whole sort of like thing would just be gutting that you would just live in that. I can't maybe you live in that moment. No, I'd lose the sight for the keep the memories.
Yeah, I mean, where would all your stories come from if your memories are gone?
Exactly.
Would you rather die in 20 years with no regrets or live to 100 with a lot of regrets?
Die in 20 years with no regrets. I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
Okay, great. Intimate club or festival?
Intimate club.
Drum and bass or UK garage?
UK garage.
Love it. Coffee or tea?
Tea. Well, I have drank a lot of coffee recently, but like nothing beats coming home to a good cup of tea and some biscuits. So tea, definitely.
Definitely. The snow or the beach?
Beach. But I do love the snow.
A night in or a night out?
This is hard because of my
job. It's a
job.
Tough one. No?
I think because of my job, more recently, nights in are so good because I'm always out.
Yeah.
So like a night in, watching a film, having a bath, I pick the night in, you know, because it doesn't come around.
Are you watching any good shows?
I just finished... White Lotus, which I think everyone's watching, which is amazing. Have you ever watched White Lotus?
Yes.
Amazing. That
no, I couldn't get into it. I could not get into it.
Have you watched the first season or the second season? Have you watched the second season yet?
I just watched the second. I got up to the second episode first season and I was bored.
Oh, you've got to put your time in. But the thing is, you can watch the second season without watching the first. And the second season, but you should watch it all. But the second season is like unbelievable. The other thing that I'm watching that finishes Succession, if you've ever watched Succession. It's about a business tycoon. And it's like probably, obviously I used to do a lot of acting, so I have like a taste of like what I really like about things. And like Succession is like one of the most well-written TV dramas I think I've ever seen. So Succession.
I will note that down from an actor's perspective.
It's all about status. It's all about how people treat each other, how people lie to see each other. It's like incredibly good.
Okay, well, I'm going to start a new show tonight. Right. Okay, three more and we're done. If you could only save two pieces of gear from your studio, which would you choose?
My microphone, my A1 push,
What was the other one? Microphone and what?
Ableton push. So it's like a push pad where you can like chop up vocals. You can create pads. Like you could just do so much with it, and it's like a massive part of how I make music. So without it, I think it would be a bit crap. And there's this little thing I love using called the Emu Moffat, and that's like a wicked part of like a lot of samples that I find, a lot of like bassline tones that I've been using recently, like, so I think I'd keep those three.
I like that. Okay, if you could have one superpower, what would it be and why?
Oh, I was talking to someone about this the other day. Probably to go back into like to time travel. I'm fascinated by history. I love history. I actually have been very sort of like nerdy recently. Like when I've been touring, instead of listening to music whilst touring and watching like Netflix and stuff, I've been listening to like history podcasts where it's just like, I think it's so interesting to listen to like people's past mistakes or how people treated each other and like just how the world was. So like time travel for me would be unbelievable, because just to go back and see it all, or go forward, like, you know, I think that fascinates me. So time travel would be my superpower.
Most definitely. What is your favorite English slang word lingo to use? What's your favorite one?
The one that always comes out, and I think I've said it a few times in this conversation, is geezer. I love the word, and it's like, it's just a nice way to say, oh yeah, he's a geezer. I'm like, they're a geezer. Like, I think it's just it comes out a lot. So I think it must be one of my favorite words in the English language.
But geezer could translate to, is it just strictly an old man or just
no? No, like I've called myself a geezer at some place. It's hard to explain. It's usually like a guy. Like, it's usually talking about a guy. Like, I mean, a girl could be a geezer as well, but it's just a slang way of saying a guy, like, oh, that geezer looks cool, that's how I tell, oh, that geezer, like, but usually geezers are known as these like cheeky chappies, like, in from London, but like I just call people I like geezers, and like, he's a nice geezer.
I love that. I mean, to us, geezer is like a really old man.
Oh, really?
But I like the English meaning behind it better. That's
doing it.
Way more casual.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with me today. It was a pleasure learning a lot about you, and I am definitely looking forward to your upcoming releases on Homegrown.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you to everyone from Gray Area for watching.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.